Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Inside the Net is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Inside the Net with Amber MacArthur, episode 36 for October 3rd, 2006. Lovetastic. Inside the Net is brought to you by Dell. Check out Leo's picks at twit.tv/Dell today. And by Showtime. Showtime presents a killer new series, Dexter. The Chicago Sun-Times says, it's fantastic, a classic in the making, and one of the fall's best new shows. And you can see it for free. Watch Dexter Sunday at 10, 9 Central on Showtime, part of the Showtime free preview. Hi, this is Leo Laporte. Welcome to Inside the Net. I'm alone once again, deserted by Megan Maroney, her twins beckoned, and by Amber MacArthur with her new job at City TV. But I do have some good news. Amber will be back next week. We're recording a show tonight, actually, October 3rd, at the No Regrets Bar and Grill in Toronto and Liberty Village. In fact, we're having a meetup there. If you get this information in time, please come by. Information on upcoming.org or at my blog, leoville.vox.com. Amber and Merlin Mann and Callie Lewis of Geek Brief TV and I will all be there. And we'll be recording a special Inside the Net roundtable on new media versus old. Should be kind of interesting. Now that Amber's in the old media, I come from the old media. Merlin is definitely new media. And, of course, Callie Lewis, who will be co-hosting with me on Call for Help just for a month next month and is in town for that, is absolutely new media. Somebody who had no television experience at all and yet hosts now, 9 months in, perhaps, well, you know when we interviewed her, one of the most popular video blogs on the net today, Geek Brief TV. So that should be a lot of fun. You can attend the recording if you get this in time tonight, October 3rd at No Regrets, and you can hear what happened next week on Inside the Net. Meanwhile, we're going to interview yet another developer of a Web 2.0 site. The site is lovetastic.com, written entirely in Ruby on Rails. Ryan Norbauer created this site. It's for gay men who want to meet serious relationships, committed relationships. There's no toplessness on it. It's not, you know, real sexy. It's actually really a very beautiful, simple, and effective site. Version 2.0 of his matchmaking site. I asked Ryan if he'd done all the programming himself.
Yeah, that's right. I have a friend and colleague who's helping me. His name is Jonathan Dance, and he lives in Troy, New York. And he's been doing, I guess, some consulting, you might call it. He's helped me do zip code searches and things like that.
Right.
But mostly I did it myself.
It's a great looking site. Yeah, I love it. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I did the first one in PHP, and then I've rewritten the whole thing in Rails.
So this Lovetastic is brand new. I mean, it literally launched a couple of days ago. So
you
don't have any case studies yet. But what I'd like to do is do a case study on the process of bringing this up online, Ryan. So tell me a little bit about your background, first of all.
Okay, well, I've done an incredibly varied amount of things. I'm originally from West Virginia, and I have worked as a network engineer at NASA. I've done psychology research at the CDC. I worked as the head of foreign affairs for a member of parliament in London for
a
year.
Wow, how interesting.
And then I came back to the United States thinking that I might study politics in graduate school, and then had the idea for what was at the time Scene 404, and which became Lovetastic, which was...
You wanted to call it Scene 404?
That's right. I mean, it turned out to be a little bit of an obscurantist name, and so we decided to change it.
What does that mean?
Well, the idea is that the website is an alternative to the gay scene, so to speak.
Right. The party scene.
Exactly. Yeah. The bar scene and right. what is referred to as the hookup scene.
Right.
Generally the idea is it being very superficial and about physical relations rather than sort of spiritual or intellectual connections.
Right.
And so 404, as I'm sure you will know, Leo, is the error code returned by a server when something is not found.
Now I get it.
And so it's a sort of scene alternative.
The scene is lost and you've found it. But I think Lovetastic might be a little bit better name.
Yeah, so, unfortunately, it was lost on quite a few people. Yeah, so
most people said, huh?
But no, return to 404 error code from lots of our customers. So,
not literally, but intellectually. So
exactly.
you had an idea. Had you done anything on this scale before?
No, I hadn't. It was, in fact, the first website for public consumption that I'd ever programmed.
Oh, my gosh.
I had done a little bit of ASP programming when I worked for a NASA contractor as a sort of like summer internship.
You're not a programmer by trade, really.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you define programmer by trade, doesn't it? I mean, there is a sort of formal school of education that is known as computer science, and
right.
then there is simply making programs.
People,
I guess I might be referred to as the hacker in the non illicit sense, in
right.
that I just like to play around and make things.
Yeah.
So I guess I would consider myself a programmer by trade, but I'm more interested in making things that are useful to society, and programming as an end, not necessarily programming as a means, not programming as an end. So
I mean, the reason I'm really curious is I think there are many, many people who, have some of these skills, have some ideas, and are trying to figure out, well, how do I implement? How do I get to a product? And that's why I'm really interested in your process here. So, you had an idea first. Did you start with the idea?
Oh, absolutely. I started with the idea. I mean, it's always been about trying to make personals better,
right.
doing personals better than they exist online right now. It just happens that the particular area of personals that I feel passionate about is gay personals. And also, I think that area tends to be a little bit more egregious in the regard of the over-sexualized sense.
They're all getting that way, I have to say, the straight and the gay.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's true.
Yeah. They're really, is a hookup scene everywhere. But that's not
I'm
what the show's
so.
About. So we're,
exactly.
go too far down that road.
Of course.
But you had a vision of something you wanted to do that was different.
Exactly. I wanted to, I wouldn't have done this merely as a business or merely as an exercise in programming. I wanted to do something better because I wanted to use it myself.
Right.
Right. I think
although you're in a committed relationship now.
Oh, yes. I'm married now.
Okay.
I'm fortunate enough to live in Massachusetts.
Oh, that's
where we
great.
Can get married.
Oh, that's that's wonderful.
But when I set out to create Scene404 and Lovetastic.com, it was always about creating a product that I myself would want to be a consumer of.
Right.
And I think that's what
right.
people should always bear in mind when they're creating a business, is that you should want to be your first customer.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think the best stuff is written for you.
Absolutely.
And then in the open source world, they call it scratching your own itch.
Exactly.
It's stuff that you want to do or you need or you wanted that doesn't exist.
Right. Now, as far as the technical sense, I would say that if people are looking to make something quickly, that Rails has been a godsend in. I completely rewrote the site in Rails. It's gone from 25,000 lines of code to 2,000 lines of
code.
Wow.
Although I think probably the exercise doing it in PHP probably was useful, at least in giving you some ideas of what you needed to do or what you needed to change. Yes?
Oh, of course it was. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, I liked PHP as a framework when I encountered it the first time. It was, in fact, the ease of use of PHP that persuaded me that it would be possible to do it myself. And when I set out to create Scene404, Rails was in its very, very infancy, and I don't think it would have been even usable at that time.
So this is a couple of years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Did you look at any of the PHP frameworks like Symfony? Did you consider something like that?
I did look at them, but they seem like they might be adding an extra layer of complexity that I didn't necessarily need for what I was doing.
Right.
Although perhaps in hindsight, I guess I might have benefited from them. I really like the MVC framework sort of separation in Rails, which separates views from logic, from presentation, or from the data model.
Stands for model view controller. And it's kind of
exactly.
it's kind of a modern way of thinking of programming, really.
Exactly. It seems at first glance to be adding extra layers of complexity, but once you get used to it, it makes things so much easier to have that kind of psychological separation between the different tasks that you do as a programmer.
Right. Right. So you had an existing implementation, you just threw it out and started from scratch.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
We're keeping the database, and in fact, the first thing that I wrote was a very complicated script in PHP and SQL to migrate all the data into the new database using the Rails conventions. Because Rails is a very opinionated framework, and I really like that. I like doing business in an opinionated way, and I like doing software in an opinionated way, not trying to appeal to everyone, but rather trying to assert. A very firm stance about how things should be done. And Rails definitely does that, about how you should name your database tables and columns, things like that.
We've talked to David Honemeyer Hansen, of course, on the show. And I guess he calls it, convention over configuration?
Exactly, convention over configuration. And I wanted to have what that convention buys you, which is to say you don't have to think. You don't have to think about the things that are arbitrary in the programming exercise, right? You want to be able to think about only the things that matter to your application, that are unique to you and the special problem you're solving. Problems that have been solved, you don't want to think about.
Aren't you concerned, though, that will kind of handcuff you down the road if you'd like to branch out more?
Well, this is something that David Heinemeier Hansen talks as well, and it's the liberating power of constraint, right? And it sounds like a paradox or something absurd, but I've been finding that concept appeals to me, and I really don't think that Rails is in any way restrictive. Like I said, I can do, it's unlike PHP. It is a completely robust language that was designed not just for processing HTML. It is Ruby, that is to say, and so I can write. For example, I wrote our payment gateway in pure Ruby just a couple of days ago.
Wow.
And it took a day because I had to adapt it to a new gateway. The authorized.net is the sort of built-in one for Ruby. And I was able to completely extend it very easily.
We should say we're talking a few days before your launch.
That's right. Yes.
And you sound so relaxed. I have to say, and maybe more than any words you can say, that is testimony to the power of Rails. I mean, you feel very confident, obviously, that everything. And you just the other day, I wrote the gateway. I mean, my God, you've got a few days left.
So that's right. I've heard that David Heinemeier Hansen himself. This is what he believes in. He's not what you would call an obsessive worker.
Right. Right.
I think someone else on the core team said that he spends a lot of time playing video games during the day. And, this is about liberating us to do the things that we need to do when we want to do to make something useful, and then, turn off the computer and go do something else.
I think that might be a defining characteristic of Web 2.0, too, and this is, I'm looking at the Lovetastic site, it's very much a Web 2.0 site. It feels like a modern site. And I think that's the new way of doing it, isn't it?
It's about simple, trying to make people not have to think.
Even in its design, it's very straightforward, very simple.
Thank you.
So you had the concept.
Very hard.
Yeah, you work hard to make it so simple, I'm sure. So you had the concept.
True. It's surprising.
How long did it take you to kind of learn Rails going from PHP? And learn Ruby, too.
It took me about 6 months, I guess. And this was over a sort of... I wasn't just sitting down reading a book constantly for those 6 months. I was doing lots of other things with the business. I've taken on my business partner, David Coy, who's been, he's going to be helping us run ads, for example, in New York City, and to try and, get this thing off the ground and help people know about it. So I was doing a lot with David to arrange sort of the business details for this new push towards lovetastic.com. And so just off and on, I was starting to learn it. I went to the Pragmatic Studio, which is given by Dave Thomas, who wrote the sort of canonical book on Ruby called The Pickaxe. I went to that in Chicago in the winter, and then sort of played with it off and on for a while. But I've only really been programming full-time on this site for about 2 months now, I would say.
Wow, that's quite amazing. So you sat down, you cranked it out. Now, one of the things that, and I've read Dave's book, of course, is that you start by defining a database. You had an existing database. And you mentioned you had to write some code to translate. How difficult was that?
Well, that's about 1,500 lines. Most of them are just raw SQL. So,
and remember that the whole program itself is the whole site itself is only 2,000 lines. So that it's almost as big as the site, just the code to translate the database.
That's right. So, I think what that was probably my fault in that it was unintelligently architected originally.
Did you re-architect
the database?
So you kind of redid it.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically normalized, but there was a lot of, for example, I was using usernames as primary keys, and I don't want to get too arcane, but Rails doesn't like that, and it likes to use just numbers as ways of pulling records out of the database.
Right. And it likes to create its own numbers, right? I mean, it wants to do it itself, yeah.
So all of my database tables were referencing this one record in the users table by username.
Ugh.
So all of the tables had to be changed to reference the new numerical IDs.
Now I see where the 1,500 lines of code comes from. Oh my God.
Stuff like that.
So one of the things that's kind of neat about Rails is that you get a site up. It's kind of the opposite of traditional programming, where you don't spend a lot of time planning. You don't spend a lot of time writing prototypes. You kind of start by getting a preliminary site up. Is that how you worked?
Yeah, I mean, I really am enjoying the sort of iterative way of programming that Rails kind of pushes you towards. I mean, you can get from downloading Rails and running a few commands to, sort of hello world, you're up and running page in about 5 minutes. And so you just start going from there. You can use the built-in scaffolding to start connecting to your database and building those pages. And I think that I just started from there. I just said, build me a scaffold for the users table.
Mm-hmm.
And I started playing. And of course, I had a very defined vision of what I wanted the site to be like, because like I said, I'm very opinionated about how a personal site should be. And I have a longer list of what it should be than what it should.
Did you consult with anybody? Did you have some users sit down and play with it and watch over their shoulder, that kind of thing?
Yeah, of course, I've been sort of demoing it to everyone I could sit in front of a computer for a long time.
Right.
But I also went to I hate to sound like a sort of 37 Signals fanboy here, but I also went to their Getting Real workshop in Chicago. And they had some very interesting ideas about simplicity and design, which I've tried to implement in the site as well. One of the greatest things about the site, I think, that I'm very proud of, and I think the 37 Signals people would be proud of, although it sounds like something to be embarrassed, is that we have significantly fewer features in the new site.
It's very streamlined. I mean, but it's got what you want. You've got tabs up at the top, home, meet guys, chat, blog, help. That's about it. And really, if you come to a site like this, that pretty much is what you want to do.
Exactly. I was on Scene 404, I was building groups and calendars for organizing meetups and lots of things that other people simply do better. If you need that, you can go to another site. We're about bringing together people who want to fall in love, and we want to do that in a way that is substantive and not superficial.
Right.
And that's what we want to do. So we want to do that really well and let other people do things that they do well.
Right.
So, we've given a lot of time to thinking about the search. It's very intelligent in that it understands lots of different things you can throw at it. Unlike some personals websites where, there are 1,000 drop-down menus for, what size of a person's body parts or sorts of things like that that you're interested in, We just have a box. And you can type in a zip code, you can type in a state name, you can type in a tag, a city, whatever. You can group them together, you can type in a username, anything. Our search understands what you said.
We're talking to Ryan Norbauer, one of the programmers and designers and founders of Lovetastic, a brand new personal site with a little bit of a twist. One of the things, it's all written in Ruby and Rails, and one of the things that people knock Ruby on, Ruby and Rails on, is its scalability. I'll ask Ryan about scalability in just a second, but I want to remind you that, as always, this podcast is brought to you by Dell. We've got some great new picks on the Leo's Picks page. I can't tell you what they are, what the price is, because they change all the time, and who knows when you're listening to this, but do check it out at twit.tv/Dell. We'd appreciate it if you're buying a new computer, if you check out the Dell's picks, and if you're going to Dell's site, go through our page so we get credit for it. twit.tv/Dell. We've been using Dell's for years. Both on the TV shows and, of course, at home. And I bought my mom a Dell because I wanted something reliable and something that I knew I could count on. You can always count on a Dell. twit.tv/Dell. We're also brought to you this week only by a new show, and I can't wait to see it. There's been a lot of talk about it on Showtime. You probably heard all the talk about it. It's called Dexter. Dexter Morgan is dysfunctional. He's psychopathic. He's a serial killer, and he's one of the good guys. Showtime presents the new killer new series, Dexter, that the Chicago Sun-Times calls fantastic, a classic in the making. People magazine gave it 4 stars. Sunday, you could see it for free on the Showtime free preview. Dexter, Sunday, 10 o'clock, 9 central, only on Showtime. To subscribe, call 1-800-SHOWTIME or go to SHO.com. I can't wait to see this. It stars the guy who was in 6 Feet Under, who was so great. David, right? 1-800-SHOWTIME, Dexter, Sunday, 10, 9 o'clock, central. Now let's get back to Ryan Norbauer and the issue of Ruby on Rails and scaling. Do you worry about scaling at all? Because that, if there's a rap on Ruby on Rails, is that it's great for web prototyping and design, but when you go into production, it may not scale well. Are you worried about that?
Well, what DHH says, and I agree, is that scaling with Rails is uninteresting. That is, it's very easy to arbitrarily stick a new application server in or to swap
in a database. Hardware. You throw hardware at it?
Yeah, and then you change a couple of lines in your configuration, and then you're done.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm running Apache out in front as a load balancer. It's serving the static files, and then it's proxying all the dynamic requests to Mongrel.
Ah.
Which is a pure Ruby web server with a couple of little C bits written inside to make it fast. And
Mongrel seems to be the answer for those who complain about scaling.
Yeah, it's very new. I mean, it was all the buzz at RailsConf in Chicago. I'm very, very pleased with what it's doing for us. I wish I didn't have to use Apache because the configuration files are absolutely hideous.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I guess you get used to them after a while, but we were using Lighty before, and the configuration files for Lighty are, maybe 25 lines, and they're just very simple and straightforward, and you can read them.
Right.
With Apache, it's not like that at all.
It's a language of its own.
Yes, but Lighty is a little broken right now in terms of being able to talk to Rails. Mm. So I'm waiting for, I think it's version 1.5, which will have its proxying abilities fixed.
How did you decide what features to have? I mean, you have profiles. Of course, any dating site has to have profiles. You have a search. Mm-hmm. You have a chat. Is that going to like IRC-style chat? Is that live chat?
Well, that was the thing that people were asking for most from Scene 404, that we thought this was the first thing that we knew we had to have at Lovetastic, because people didn't like the inability to communicate with people in real time.
Right.
So what we've done is we've written from scratch a server in Python, and we have a Flash front end.
Ah.
Which is very interesting kind of solution. I wish I could say I came up with it, but it was a friend of mine. And it's working very well. I mean, the trouble, of course, is that once you get up to large numbers of persistent connections at the same time on a machine, you have to have very specialized network programming to handle all of those mm-hmm. connections. And so you can't, for example, use a web-based chat where it's refreshing. I mean, I know 37 Signals actually has a product that does that, where it's basically just polling the server every few seconds to see if there's new stuff said in the chat, and then it shows it in the browser. That's fine for the kind of business chat that they do, but I think for real-time chat, the latency is just a little too long for that right now.
Right.
So Flash and Python was the solution for us right now. We're looking at some other things we might do to kind of open it up, like, for example, to allow people to use the Jabber protocol to connect and stuff like
right.
that.
Right. So you could use your Google client or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. You also have, I think this is interesting, Lovetastic Radio. Is that podcasts? What is that?
That's right. It's podcasts. I've only done, I think, 3 of them so far. But the idea of those is to try and do in a more personal way, or try and show people, gay men who are out there defying sort of traditional stereotypes as, gay men is people who are, just obsessed with fashion or lovemaking and things like that.
Right,
you know,
right.
So we have I've interviewed some artists, musicians. I have several already in the can, so to speak, that I'm editing and which are going to be released with the new site. And it's been an incredibly enriching experience for me to meet so many other people who are out there doing creative things, gay men who are doing creative things and interesting things, who are defying stereotypes, and who also really believe in the idea of what we're doing. And doing it as a podcast where we actually can hear people's voices, I think is a really wonderful thing, and it makes it much more personal and much more real. So I really like the podcasting medium, as I know you do too.
Yeah, well, I think I have a problem actually, but that's another
podcasting problem.
Yeah, I have a podcasting problem. That's another show. And then what's really interesting about Lovetastic, besides the, it's beautifully designed, very simple, clearly Web 2.0. Is there? It's got a political point of view as well. Yeah, I don't know if political is the right point of right way to express it.
Well, it's a sort of sociological opinion. I guess
you have an opinion,
right?
And that opinion is that well, you even say it: gay personals that treat you like a person. And
right,
and
we're the first gay personals website that I know of anywhere that doesn't allow you to post a picture of yourself with your shirt off.
No shirts off pictures.
Right. Now, that's not because we're prudes, but it's because we want to do things, we want to sort of almost militantly do things different.
Right.
We want you to know when you come to our site, from the first time you look at profiles, this is about who you are as a person and not what your body is.
And it's focused on finding more committed relationships, I presume.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the body enters into these things as well, but I like to think of online personals as something just shy of a first date.
Right.
People divulge a lot of information in their profiles on other sites that you would not disclose on a first date.
Right.
A lot of people wouldn't disclose on a first date or in a bar meeting people. Right.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I want to try and make it about
this
who
is
you
a first,
are as a person.
First date story.
Exactly.
Do you think it's important that a site like yours have a point of view, have that kind of a voice, be unique in some way?
Yeah, I really do think it is. I mean, there was a book recently, I think, called The Long Tail.
Christopher Anderson.
About this idea of increasing specialization and market niches. And, I know that personally, I really enjoy the consumer experience, so to speak, when I'm being spoken to by someone who has my opinions.
Yes.
And I'm very, I feel this way about Apple computers recently,
yes. Yes.
It's a very small segment of the market share, but I know
that's fine because you're in that segment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They do things the way I want them to. It doesn't have to be everybody that's doing it.
Right.
I'm just fine having someone give me what I want, and I don't see what's wrong with that.
And that's been the secret of Twit too. I mean, we embrace the niche, I guess, is how I've always thought of it. Yeah.
I think it's a wonderful thing. Some of the best things that are going on the internet right now are for people who are doing their own thing for other people who are interested in their own kind of obscure thing. I mean, that's what the internet's all about.
Right.
It's about bringing together people who wouldn't, otherwise meet each other, who have some sort of random connection.
Now, you're doing this for free, at least posting a profile, browsing, and receiving messages, which is, by the way, most dating sites, you can post a profile, but the receiving a message is going to cost you money, sending and receiving messages. Are you giving this away?
Well, I mean, we want anyone who wants to be a part of the community and engage in it to be able to post a profile and be there as a part of it. Now, to participate in the live chat and to send other people messages, you do have to have a little subscription.
Do you know how much that's going to cost yet? Have you decided that?
To be honest, I should say that a couple of days before we launched the site, I would know that. But we have a couple of numbers
Not
sure.
Okay.
Exactly. So we're going to hold that down to the last minute. It's not going to be very much. We're going to try and make it less than a lot of the big personal
stuff. How are you making that calculation? What factors go into that?
That's the thing. It's very arbitrary, right? And we can't decide whether, obviously we want to find a way to sustain this thing financially because we think that what it's doing is has a very important social goal. So it needs to make money. I mean, you recently took advertising on Twit, right?
Right.
I'm glad. I was actually very glad when I found that out because I know that hopefully that means we're going to be able to hear Twit for a lot longer. In our case, we want to be able to sustain it, but also we don't want to make it prohibitive so that people can't be a part of it.
Of course, it's hard to know how much it's going to cost you to sustain it at this point, right?
Well, exactly. So
what are the costs?
Starting out of the gate, it's going to be kind of arbitrary, and it's going to be based on our sort of opinion about how we want to set a price that most people can engage with and afford to be a part of it if they want to. If we have to raise the price in the future, we'll regret that, but we'll do whatever we need to, hopefully, to keep the site going because we think its mission is important.
And right now you're in the few dollars a month range. Of course, by the time you hear this podcast, you will have perforce, Ryan, made a decision. So
we'll naturally
find out by going to the website, lovetastic.com, and signing up. Yeah. I think this is, I don't want to get political because this isn't, it's about technology, not about politics, but I do have to say that I think this is a wonderful idea. And I know a lot of people who would be very interested in this site. And I notice you already have quite a few people in the database. Is that because of a Scene 404? I mean, it's not empty.
That's right. Lovetastic.com is basically Scene 404 reborn and renovated.
Okay.
So everyone who was a member of that community, which was based on the same idea, just a different name and a crappier interface, is going to be a part of the new site. Of course, people can cancel at any time and move their profiles if for some reason they don't like our new graphic scheme or something.
I love your new graphic scheme.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's the illustrator, Jesse Ledoux, did a really wonderful sort of cover image for us, which I just think is wonderful.
It's just adorable. I just love it.
Thank you.
It's very
much
happy and bright, and it says it's about love. I think that's a great.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if any of your listeners know anyone else, you said you do, but a lot of gay men are interested in this, and they don't feel that they fit in a lot of the places.
And they don't know where to find
people.
It. That's right.
Yeah. Please let them know. Lovetastic.com.
I will. Ryan, I wish you all the best. It's one of the things I love doing Inside the Net most about doing Inside the Net is getting to watch people as they begin this process. And what's neat is how simple and easy it has been for you to do. Can I just ask you a couple of questions? Was there a lot of expense initially? Did you have to lay out a lot of capital? Did you have to go ask friends for money? I mean, how hard was this to put together?
I had a little bit of money when I came back from working in London. And so I was planning on spending that to put me through graduate school.
So was this a grad school?
It was this or grad school. And, I have to say, I'm very happy to say that I chose this.
Yeah, I think so.
And so I put a few thousand dollars into it.
Mostly for server space.
The hosting was a bit expensive. I had to buy some podcasting equipment. I bought promotional cards and stuff like that.
Right.
But, it was very cheap to get started. I think probably with, $4,000 or $5,000, you could easily do what I did.
And how do you plan to market it? Because, of course, it's one thing to have the site, and it's a beautiful site, and it's working, and it's up. How do you the trick is always to get the word out. How do you plan to do that?
This is the great thing about what we were talking about doing something that's different and interesting. There's another good book, which I've read, called Purple Cowl by Seth Godin, who's a sort of marketing guru kind of fellow.
Yep.
And that book is all about the idea that businesses that are interesting and doing something that they're passionate about and that is unique, they market themselves. So, we're going to try and bring our story, to people like you and other people who think that what we're doing is just kind of interesting. Because, I think it is. I think we're doing something new in the world of online personals and particularly gay online personals.
Right.
So we're going to try and speak to people in the press. We might be talking to some people who can help us do that. We're going to run some ads. We've been talking about maybe running ads on the subway in New York City, which I'm very excited
to
do.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, our thing is that we can't just necessarily run our ads in a lot of the city gay magazines because there are people out there who, like myself, don't read those magazines because for whatever reason the content just doesn't speak to me. I would be missed by the marketing campaign that just looks at those magazines. So we like the idea of something like the subway because it reaches just absolutely everyone in the city.
Right.
And
I think as you say, having a unique voice, it helps a lot. And one of the nice things about sites like this is any site that's about community is there is a natural kind of tendency to spread the word and people want to tell other people about it. And you can kind of count a little bit on viral marketing to have this spread around.
Yeah. If you're doing something interesting, that's what's important.
Well, good luck, Ryan. It's really great to talk to you.
Well, thanks, Leo. I'm a great fan of the screensavers, so it's great
neat
to talk to you.
Oh, that's great. You probably
good old days.
You grew up with it, Ryan.
It's true.
Yeah.
Don't mean to make you feel old.
Ryan Norbauer is the creator of Lovetastic, along with His business partner, David, is it Cooey? Is that how you say it, David's name?
David Coy, actually.
Coy, okay. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know more or you have a friend who is looking for love, the place to go is lovetastic.com. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Thank you, Leo.
That's Ryan Norbauer, founder and programmer of lovetastic.com. And it's really pretty a pretty high recommendation for the power of Ruby on Rails. And really, I think a very attractive, very good-looking Web 2.0 site. Simple and effective at the same time. And a site that just went live about 2 days ago. So that's pretty exciting. Now, we'll be back, as I mentioned, next week with Amber MacArthur, her triumphant return, and a great show with featuring two of our favorite previous guests from Inside the Net, Callie Lewis of Geek Brief TV and Merlin Mann of 43folders.com. We want to thank you for listening. This doesn't mean, by the way, the fact that we have sponsorship, that the donations aren't still gladly accepted. Your $2 a month pays for infrastructure, the rent, the web hosting, the equipment that makes all of these podcasts possible. It's a way of casting your vote in favor of what we're doing here. We really appreciate it. You'll find those donate buttons at twit.tv. We'll see you next time. I'm Leo Laporte, Inside the Net.